Procrastinating, a term most often used by the millennial generation, is a method of putting something off, delaying, or postponing something by taking part in the act of baking.
Welcome to Procrastibaking, a place to talk about our baking obsession and avoid doing everything else. Coming to you from Southern California, I'm Louisa.
And from Eastern North Carolina, I'm Rachel.
Hello, Rachel from Eastern North Carolina.
Mike picks on me so bad because why do you have to say you're from Eastern North Carolina? I'm like, because she says she's from Southern California.
It's only fair. We need our listeners.
I was like, it has to be balanced.
Right? It's true. It'd be weird if it wasn't there. And also, I want people to like pull out a map and be able to circle like a rough estimate of where they think we live, you know? Just yes. For my own.
And secretly, we're in Russia.
Well, welcome, Rachel. How are you?
I'm doing good. I surprised myself and baked some bakes that were not required for this week's episode. So I'm happy with myself for doing that.
Wow.
I've been kind of slacking off lately.
I mean, it's hard because we have been loading our challenges for the episodes with a lot of bakes. So it's hard to find time to make anything outside of that. But tell me what you ended up making.
So I made drop biscuits for breakfast one morning, and then had the leftovers for dinner another night. And then I also made from 100 cookies her soft chocolate chip cookies.
Oh, it's been a while since we've had a 100 cookies update.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
They were good. I liked them better than the pan banging oatmeal chocolate chip cookies that I made.
Right.
They were very soft and we ate them. They'd cooled enough to where you could pick them off the pan, but they were still slightly warm. So my neighbor was hanging outside with my husband. And he's got a big sweet tooth. So I walked some over to him and we ate them hanging out outside.
You have the best neighbor. He loves eating all your baked goods.
I'm so happy that he moved here so I can get rid of all my baked goods. So they were slightly warm and gooey. They were very soft. They definitely earned their name, soft cookies.
Good. And what did you think about the bake time for this one? Because I know that's been a recurring, not an issue, but just we've noted that some things take longer to bake.
Yeah, some are slightly off. This was perfect. And I think it is because they're a softer cookie. The bake time was already a little less, I think.
Okay.
So it turned out well. And I was worried because a lot of times soft cookies are like thick cakey cookies.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like those. But these were not, they didn't puff up. And it did have me like tap the tray halfway through. And I think that it didn't make the like pan banging ripples. I think that stopped it from being like puffy and cakey.
Yeah. I've noticed that. What did I make that required the tapping? Something from that book as well. Oh, I made the lemon sugar cookies.
Ooh,
that were really good. They're huge. Were your cookies really big?
Not these. These were not. These are like normal size.
Okay. Yeah, I recently made the lemon sugar cookies from that book, and I love how they're like bakery huge. Oh,
yeah,
and they are. Well, anyway, she had me do the same thing, tapping it, and I like how that kind of makes it dip down a little bit. Which you're right, it makes it not cakey. It makes it a little more chewy, I guess.
Chewy,
got a little dip in it. Yeah, that's great.
Yes, I love it when cookies are the size of my face.
Right? Oh, I think you need that on a t-shirt. You want me to put that on a t-shirt for you? Yeah.
Let's do that. Yeah, let's add that to the list.
That's a conversation starter.
Right?
No, I do too. I love a really giant cookie. What's funny though is that I have a cookie jar and they didn't fit in the cookie jar. So I was like, oh, what do I do now? So I ended up just putting them in a Ziploc bag next to the cookie jar adjacent. So close enough.
I need a wide mouth cookie jar to make cookies in this book.
That's great. So you've been doing some extra baking just because, or are you avoiding something?
No, it was just for a chocolate craving.
What are you procrastinating? I want to know. Is it the laundry?
Right?
No. I was just thinking it's been a while since we've confessed what we are avoiding by baking. But that's okay too. Baking just for fun. Totally valid.
Just for fun. Yeah.
That's great. What else? Anything fun outside of baking?
This was somewhat fun. It was work related, but it was my first golf tournament fundraiser. So that was neat to see how that works because I'm not a golfer. So I got to learn some new vocabulary and see different things. And I realized that because it was a fundraiser, most people were there because it was a fundraiser. And we saw all kinds of crazy golf strokes. And one person swung and hit the ball, and the ball went directly to their right and hit a tree and came like flying back at us. And we were like behind them.
Holy cow.
Yeah. I was like, well, I could have played then.
I was just going to ask you if you participated.
No, I was the beer and snack lady.
There you go. I like that. That's like when you're supposed to yell four, right? Is that the right score?
I don't know. I know that's golf related, but nobody actually yelled that. So I don't know.
Man, missed opportunity.
I think it means like, watch out. Yeah.
I've kind of always wanted to do that. I don't know how to play. I don't know anything about golf. I'm sure people assume that already, but but I always kind of wanted to yell four. Or I think in tennis, don't you yell love for something? Is that also when a tennis ball is coming towards your head? I don't really know. But
I see. I thought love had something to do with the score.
You're probably right. I have no idea. I just want to yell things out in sports. I don't even want to really play them. I just want to yell things loudly.
Well, you'll make a good sports mom then.
There you go. Yeah, I hope my little one, maybe she'll get into something and I can just yell on the sideline. I'll be that mom. I can yell ref, like annoyed. And then they'll ask me like, what's wrong, ma'am? And I have any clue what I'm talking about. Well, that's fun. I hope you get to play next time. I think that would make a good story.
I think it would also be a good story. Yes. So what's been new with you?
Nothing too crazy. I've been trying to do some baking. Yeah, I think the only thing I've made outside of our challenges was the lemon sugar cookies that I baked when I had a couple friends over. It is so nice having vaccinated friends because they can come visit now. And I'm really happy because one of my friends, Molly, is moving back to the East Coast this summer. And so we only have a couple months left with her here. And it's nice having, you know, people that can come over because we're all vaccinated and to meet the baby and hang out. So I made the cookies in honor of their visit. And yeah, just hanging out with my baby. This is my last week of maternity leave. So I go back to work this week, which is a little sad, but also, I don't know. I kind of miss like being around other people, if that makes sense. Like, yeah. And I do like my job. I didn't realize how much I would want like a little bit of both. Like I definitely want to be with my baby, but also kind of thrive and having like my work and something outside of being at home. So I'm both like not looking forward to it and also looking forward to it. It's a weird feeling.
Bittersweet.
Yeah, bittersweet. And yeah, that's pretty much it. The weather has been really nice here. So we've been going out on a lot of walks and we went to this, really beautiful public gardens called Descanso Gardens. That was my baby's first little outing.
Oh, I saw your photos.
Isn't it beautiful there?
Yeah, those were nice.
When you come, we'll definitely go because I think you would appreciate it being a gardener and all. It's so beautiful and everything's blooming and it was just like really peaceful. So yeah, that's pretty much it. And my mom is here and she has a big sweet tooth. So I'm trying to take advantage. And
that's helpful.
You know, it's funny though. She's like, well, you know, my mom, she doesn't mince words. She's very honest with her opinions about everything, but especially with baking. So I have a funny story that I'll save for later about, she was my taste tester for my dessert, one of my desserts. And she was very honest about it, which I appreciated because it didn't really turn out that well. So I kind of knew what she was going to say, but yeah, it's good having her here because, you know, I think Raul is sometimes extra nice to me. I'll give him something and he's like, it's good. It's good. It could be sweeter. And she's more like, this needs more sugar and I would not eat this. And this, you should try again. I'm making her sound really mean, but she says it with love, I think.
But I think at the end,
tough love. So yeah, so I'll save that story for a little later. But that's pretty much it. That's my long-winded answer to how I'm doing. I'm also going to be eating the lava cake that I made. So sorry.
we can take two breaks for you. That's okay.
Two breaks. That's what I need.
That's a good sign. So this season, we've been exploring different types of alternative baking. Today, we're talking dairy swaps. Other than noticing lately that you can usually sub in your milk of choice, I haven't baked dairy-free too often. Lou, can you walk us through your experience with dairy-free baking?
Yes, this is actually something that I've been learning a lot more about since I've been making changes to my own diet. There's actually more options than I thought, which is, I guess, inspiring and reassuring. I think initially when I was like, how am I going to make all these things with no dairy? It was a little overwhelming, but there are so many like plant-based milks specifically, and actually a decent amount of plant-based butter as well that I found works pretty well. Like I've made several of the recipes and 100 cookies using a butter. It's the brand that I've liked is called Miyoko's, and it is like cashew and coconut oil based. That worked really well. Like I've made cookies using that and served them to other people and they couldn't tell the difference. I know, what is the brand called? Country Crock? They make like an olive oil spread that I've also used.
Cool.
And yeah, and that's actually worked pretty well. I would say out of the two, I think Miyoko's is my favorite. And then in terms of milk, there's like there are a lot of milk alternatives.
I've noticed that lately.
Isn't it wild? Okay, so I would say I found that like the best ones are like oat milk, because that gives you like a creamier, thicker consistency than maybe like almond. So I've really liked using oat milk in a lot of bakes. I've also really liked using, I don't know if you've heard of it, but the brand that I use is called Ripple Milk. And it is made out of pea protein, which sounds super weird.
Is it green?
It's not green. It's like an off. I wish it was. I'd make it more interesting. It's
that
like an
cool.
off-white color. So it's a little odd color, but it's like really thick. That's what you need.
Oh,
like,
that's nice.
Yeah, you need like a milk alternative that has like some body to it. And the Ripple made out of pea protein has been one that I've really enjoyed. So that's worked out pretty well. I've made some cakes, and I made my lava cake using the Ripple, and that worked out pretty good.
And are you usually just substituting like 1-to-1? They're pretty equal?
Yeah, they are. So that makes it pretty easy.
Nice. What about like cream, or like if something calls for like whipping cream or something like that?
Have you made anything with that? Okay, so that's a little, let me see. Have I made anything with whipping cream?
Or yogurt, something?
I have not. I did have some stuff that called for yogurt, and what I did was that I subbed coconut cream because that's dairy free.
Yeah, those would be similar.
Yeah, that worked out pretty well. And I think the coconut flavor, because I know a lot of people are not coconut people, but the coconut flavor is so mild that you really can't tell that it's coconut based, but it gives you like that moisture that you need.
And I guess they do make soy yogurt now. I've forgotten about that.
Oh yeah, that's right. I haven't done too much with soy, honestly, because I also had to cut out soy from my diet, although I'm now reintroducing it. So maybe I'll start experimenting with that. So a lot of the things that I had to use had to be both dairy and soy free.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I think soy has a decent amount of options. And more than anything, I'm just impressed that there are so many things available. And I don't know about you, but like even just going out to places here, there's like a frozen yogurt place we found that makes things with oat milk for like, you know, people who can't have dairy. And there's a decent amount of like vegan bakeries. So I'm also impressed that it's like relatively easy to eat this way, even not being able to have dairy. I'm like glad that people have options, because it can be tough wanting to celebrate things and not having the option. But at least here in LA, there's like a ton of options. So I don't know. Have you found the same experience there in North Carolina?
There, I've noticed that like designations for menu items showing up as vegan. But not necessarily, well, probably in a bigger city, but not here, like specifically vegan restaurants or vegan bakeries. But I do like the coffee shops and stuff. They'll have oat milk or soy milk, you know, where you can choose what you want.
Yeah.
And I like oat milk. The first time I poured it in my cereal, I was like, this looks like dirty dishwater. But I, you know, kept going and I was like, oh, this is good.
Yeah. Now you're okay with it.
Creaminess. Yeah.
So yeah. If I could give one suggestion, it's like, just make sure whatever you're using is, yeah, has that creamy, thick consistency that I haven't seen so much with like almond milk or coconut milk even, but coconut cream is where it's at. So. Baking is a fun way to explore the food of other countries. This season, we've been baking our way around the world without leaving our kitchens. In this episode, we traveled to Iran. Rachel, if I know you as well as I think I do, then I know you've got some trivia planned for us.
I do. Are you ready to play?
Sort of. I don't usually do very well with these. But I will say I walk away learning new things. So, yeah, I guess I'm ready.
So what was the name of Iran prior to 1935?
Prior to 1935. Was it Persia?
It was. Ding, ding, ding.
I got one right.
So what is their largest export?
Ooh, okay. Let me think. I'm thinking about like things that came up most often when I was researching bakes. So a lot of nuts. What else? I don't know. Part of me wants to say like rice, because I think rice is used a lot in Persian food, right?
Yeah, it is.
Could it be rice? Maybe rice. Let's guess rice.
I think rice was one of their largest imports.
Oh, JK.
So petroleum is what they're sending out.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
But you're right, too, though. I think they're a large provider of pistachios.
Ah, okay.
You're on the right trail with the nuts.
Cool.
What is their national animal?
National animal. I don't know. I want to say something regal, but I can't think of anything.
I can't think of anything.
I don't know. Some kind of bird, maybe. I can't guess.
It is a lion.
Ooh, a lion. That is regal. A lion.
Yeah. You're on the right track. And last one. What month does the Iranian New Year start?
Let's guess. December?
It is March.
March. I got 1 out of 4.
You know what? I wouldn't have gotten any of these either, except for the first one.
You know what? That's kind of beautiful, though. Like, March is, you know, springtime, so it kind of makes sense, right?
I thought the same thing. Yeah. Like, all the new life and everything.
Yeah. That's really nice. Well, that was tough, Rachel.
So tell us what you baked on your trip to Iran.
Okay. So I made something called mashati, which is a sweet treat that's almost like, what's the word? It's almost like flan-like, or I guess flan is like the closest. Well, I don't know, flan. Like gelatinous, I think.
Okay.
That's a better way to describe it. And it's made out of cornstarch and sugar. And you're adding, my thing had me add almonds and pistachios and rose water, which I saw come up in a lot of recipes.
Yes, me too.
And so you're cooking that up on the stove until it firms up and then cutting it out. I did see that like diamonds are a really popular shape to cut things out into, but I decided to make mine into hearts just to do something different. Also, I didn't think I could free cut like a diamond, so I wanted like a mold to help me out. And I think it looked really pretty. Rachel, I used way too much rose water in my dessert. Oh my Lord. And I
how
was
much did it call for? Do you remember?
Oh my gosh. It called for like a third of a cup.
Oh, wow.
Right? It was too much. To be fair, I have never baked with or cooked with rose water. Really, I had just known like rose water to be like a beauty product up until now, you know, like something you put on your face, but yeah, so I saw in the recipe, it said a third of a cup or to your preference. And I was like, well, I don't know my preference, so I'll go with a third of a cup. That was the wrong choice to make. So, you know, the sweets were that it like firmed up really nicely. It looked pretty. It was relatively easy to cut out into, you know, the heart shape that I wanted. And in theory, like the things that are in it are things that I would like, but it tasted like soap. Yeah. And my mom, I was like, Mom, you want to taste test? She's like, okay, a little wary already. And she takes a bite and she's like, honey, I love you. And I don't think I ever imagined a day where you would bake something for me that I really hated, but this is it. Like, this is terrible. Meanwhile, my husband's like, it's not the worst thing I've ever had. He's like,
aw,
oh gosh. I was like, I don't take it personal because, you know, it's a learning experience. And yeah, I feel like if you're not familiar with the ingredients, you don't know. I didn't realize how like potent of a taste that would be. So, so I essentially made like heart-shaped soap with pistachio sprinkled on top. Like Rachel noted when I sent her the picture.
Yeah, it's pretty accurate. It's really cute. Yeah.
They looked cute. Yeah. But it did not taste good. You know what? I mean, I don't think I would give up on Iranian desserts completely, like, because they do have, I think I love pistachios. So I do think maybe I could try something else, but just now that I know that rose water is so strong, I will be more careful with how much I use. But it was fun to try something. That's what I've loved about all of these, is something new to try that kind of gets you using ingredients you're not familiar with. So in that aspect, I think it was fun to experiment with. What did you make?
Well, so the experimentation aspect is what convinced me to put the rose water in my dessert because when I smelled it, I was like, oh, I don't know about this. I made, I believe it's Loza Nargil.
Okay.
And it is like a coconut dessert. It's coconut cream, sugar and cardamom and rose water. And you supposedly cook it down in a pot and then pour it into a pan and make it by 8. To chill. And then once it's chilled, you slice it into diamonds. I chilled mine. It said 3 to 4 hours, but I was making it late at night. So I chilled it overnight. And the next day, it still was not firm enough to cut.
Oh, no.
I think it was also too thin. Like, I had to really spread it out to get it to fill the pan. But I thought, well, maybe it's supposed to be thin. Almost like a bark, maybe.
Yeah.
But it was just like, you could scoop it and put it on your ice cream or something.
Darn.
But still very in its coconut shreddy form, not a solid anything.
What I find interesting too is like when you were talking about the ingredients, there's nothing that would thicken in there.
No. So I don't know. I'm going to have to look for another recipe because I did end up really liking it.
Yeah. There's nothing that binds, but the flavor was good.
Yeah. And so it said use 3 tablespoons of rose water. And when I smelled the rose water, I was like, I don't know about this. I was like, maybe because I have orange blossom water and I like that. And I was like, maybe I'll just trade it out. And I said, no, you need to try it. And so I was like, well, I'm going to put just a tablespoon. And I was like, that looks like a lot. So I poured a little bit out of my tablespoon, but slightly less than a tablespoon's worth. And I could taste it, but it wasn't overpowering.
You were smart. You were smart. Kudos, Rachel. Rose water is a dangerous ingredient to use.
Yes. Very potent. So yeah, I liked it. I mean, even if it doesn't firm up, it's still pretty tasty. So
that's great. And mine also had cardamom. I forgot about mentioning that. So the ingredients are things that we love already.
Yeah. So that's what led me to pick this. I also found a recipe for ice cream that was rose water and saffron and pistachio. So I'm still thinking, since I have the rose water already, I might as well try that too.
Have you been able to find saffron? Because mine did call for saffron, but I couldn't figure out where to get that. So I omitted it.
I found it. I found it at TJ Maxx.
Really?
Yeah. Did they have like a kitchen section?
Yeah.
With all those like weird, funky, like flavored honeys or something. So yeah, they had a little glass bottle of it.
They always have like the oddest things there, but yeah, good stuff.
So I'll probably never find it there again, but.
No, that's good to know. TJ Maxx is where it's at. TJ Maxx also has like really good coffee. Well, I know you don't drink coffee, but if you did drink coffee, you would like that.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. So we enjoyed our time in Iran and we will come back. We will use less. I will use less rose water.
Less rose water. Yeah. Movies encourage our imaginations and delight our senses. Some special movies also tickle our taste buds. When that happens, we can't help but try to recreate the desserts they featured. Today's movie selection is Chef, Lula, I remember watching this movie with you and Raul at your place in Charleston. We watched the movie and helped Raul make the iconic Cubanos from the movie. And by helped, I mean that we bought the groceries and then we went to the beach for the day while Raul cooked the pork.
I remember that. That was so fun. I remember that. Do you remember this? The, when my phone died, I didn't like charge it completely.
And oh, yes.
We got in trouble because we like, but it was kind of nice in a way. Like we just went to the beach and we're like completely disconnected, literally because I had no cell phone to use. So we were unreachable. Which was nice.
Yeah, true vacation. Nice. It was a good beach day, and it was good to come back and finish making the sandwiches with Raul. And I think we made mojitos too with your mint plant.
We did. Yeah. I think we should recreate this memory when we see each other at the beach this summer.
Yes, that would be good. Those are some good sandwiches.
They were really good. Yeah. Raul was very proud of those sandwiches. You know, it's funny, side story. You can cut this out, Raul, if it's too long. But we tried to make these sandwiches a few months ago, and we had a hard time finding Cuban bread. Did I tell you this?
No.
So yeah, so like you need Cuban bread for Cubanos. We couldn't find any Cuban bread. Raul went to a Cuban restaurant hoping that they would sell him just the bread, you know? And he goes and they were like, oh, we don't know what that is. And he was like, you're a Cuban restaurant. What kind of bread are you using for your Cubanos? And they brought out the bread and it was French bread. Not Cuban bread.
That's what I ended up buying when I tried to make them in Hartsville. It was the closest thing I could find.
I mean, it's like close and this will taste fine, but it's like, come on.
It's not the same.
It's not. And we were just like so disappointed. And the people with the rest, I'm like, how do you not know what Cuban bread is? Okay. So this summer we have a plan. We're going to watch the movie, make the Cubanos with Cuban bread, because I think we can definitely find it at like the Publix back home.
Oh, yeah. Publix is trusty.
It is, yeah.
So the sandwiches were good, but we're not here to discuss the sandwiches today, are we?
We are not, although I could talk about the sandwiches forever. But
they were so good.
We are talking about a dessert that was made in this movie. First of all, I love this movie. I think I would probably say this is like one of my favorite movies. It is so like, it's just like easygoing and like a good story about family and love and good food and appreciating like the food from different states and like the cultural influences that you find in different states and father, son. It just has everything. Every awesome. It has a great soundtrack too. I love it. And there's a scene early on in the movie where we get to see the chef that the movie's about have a breakdown, like a nervous breakdown, because he's having this. I hope this isn't a spoiler. It's not a spoiler.
It's been out long enough. It's fine.
Okay. Okay. So the chef, John Favreau, is the actor, and he plays his character is named Carl Casper. So he is the chef of a restaurant, and then a food critic comes to his restaurant one day, and he serves him a variety of things, but the dessert that he serves him is a lava cake. And it turns out that the food critic ends up writing like a scathing review of how uninspired he is, and especially like the lava cake, that it's like boring and predictable. And that kind of like spurs Chef Casper to have like a moment of truth, and it launches like the rest of the movie. He goes on this road trip to like reconnect with his love of food and get like his creative juices flowing again. So yeah, that's what we decided to make in honor of our dessert in a movie segment for this episode, is the lava cake from Chef. So how was your experience making the lava cake, Rachel?
You know, and I wanted to ask you a question too, before I tell you about that, because it just occurred to me as you were talking, you know, the critics said he was so uninspired. When we watched this movie though, I feel like lava cakes were not trendy. But now I feel like they're everywhere. Like I think even like Domino's has like a lava cake.
Yeah, you're right. They do have a lava cake.
But it was kind of new to me when I watched the movie. I was like, I want to eat one of those.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think that I really had seen them too.
But now it's like they're everywhere. Like I think maybe a couple Italian restaurants have them, and like,
do you think this movie kind of helped?
That's like, what I was going to ask you. In? Yeah, I wonder.
Yeah, that's possible. And I mean, I guess I can see why they're a popular item to have as a dessert, because they are like relatively simple and like a crowd pleaser, which I guess is what you want for like family type restaurants.
But they've still got that like party trick element to them if they work out right.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't know. Maybe we need to do some research did Chef, the movie Chef, revitalize the dying lava cake industry?
Yeah, maybe that would be a good. We should get like education in like food and pop culture and see how that all ties in. That would be cool.
Yes, very interesting.
So yeah, I was surprised by how simple they are to make. My recipe made 4 of them and 4 ramekins, and I was surprised too by the number of eggs. There was 4 whole eggs and 2 egg yolks in mine. I'm like, well, these are protein heavy. We can have these for lunch one day.
That's interesting to hear because I've been avoiding. Rachel knows I've been avoiding egg. My diet is all over the place.
Yes, I thought about you when I'm cracking these eggs. I'm like, oh my gosh,
that's a lot of eggs. I didn't realize. Did you get the oozing effect? That's what I really want to know because I find that that was tricky.
So it was gooey in the middle. Like you could tell it was something that probably should have oozed. But it didn't when I sliced it. And I don't know. So my recipe said 9 to 11 minutes. And it gave me cues for like, you know, it looks underbaked, but you can touch it and it's spongy and all this. So I pulled it out, but I don't know if it doesn't ooze. Does that mean it cooked too long so it's no longer gooey? Or does that mean it didn't get hot enough to be gooey?
How long did you let it cool after taking it out of the oven?
5 minutes. Did I wait too long, you think?
See, okay. I don't know. We might need to invite like the lava cake expert on the show because
yes,
I had similar questions. And it's funny because I'm like, lava cake, easy. But similar to you, I did not. Well, I got both effects. I made 3 lava cakes. The first one I baked for 13 minutes because that's what my recipe called for.
Okay.
I let it cool for 5 minutes because that's what my recipe also instructed me to. When I flipped it over, it fell apart. Like the bottom stuck to the ramekin. And so I did get the lava. It looked like the lava effect, but it had fallen apart.
Right.
The second time I let it cool for 30 minutes, same bake time, flipped it over, it fell apart again. So I was like, okay, I think I need to maybe either bake it longer. Like, I don't know. The third time, that's what I did. I baked it a little longer, 2 minutes longer, and I let it cool for maybe like 50 minutes. And that time, it held together pretty well, but it didn't ooze. Like I had let it cool too long, so you don't get the lava effect. So it's a little tricky. Like you want it to cool long enough so that it comes out okay of the mold, but not so long that the inside hardens and you don't get that lava effect. Because what I got was just like soft center, like you did.
And what did you use on your molds? Did you butter them or spray them?
I sprayed them, but now I'm wondering if I should have done something. And I generously sprayed because they made it a point to say generously spray. So I generously sprayed.
I did the same thing. I was even worried that I oversprayed because one time when I worked with the high school students, we oversprayed something. And when it was done cooking, there was like a layer of like grease on top. But I didn't have that, but mine came out okay.
Did you just use like vegetable spray or what did you use? Pam?
No, I used the Pam with the flour in it for baking.
Maybe that's what I need. I almost thought like maybe I should sprinkle some flour on it, but I didn't. Maybe I should have.
And you could probably sprinkle cocoa powder too. Would probably work.
That way it doesn't show up the color.
Yep.
How did it taste though?
Oh, it was good.
Yeah.
It was really good. It was fudgy. I put powdered sugar and whipped cream and strawberries. And it was really good. And
good.
Mine had coffee in it, instant coffee. And I always put it in when it says, because I know that it works to enhance chocolate. But this time I could taste the coffee. It only had a quarter teaspoon, but I don't know that just compared to the, like, it only had a quarter cup of flour. So maybe the ratio or something there was off.
Yeah.
But it wasn't overwhelming. So I ate it with no problem. And I'm going to have another one tonight. So no worries.
<That's> good. Yeah, I thought mine tasted really good too. I did powdered sugar with raspberries and mine had no egg because I made a vegan version.
But yeah, so what'd you use for that?
So really it was just, I made like a buttermilk with a plant-based, I used the Ripple, the pea protein milk with apple cider vinegar. I found that that's like a popular thing when you're not using eggs. To use apple cider vinegar. I don't remember. I'll have to look up like the ratio, like how much of a tablespoon or teaspoon per egg that you're supposed to use. But
that's so that cool.
Buttermilk kind of helped give it, I don't know, volume and body, I guess. And it did also call for both baking powder and baking soda. Besides that, everything else was the same, like just regular flour. And
did you use chocolate chips or like chocolate?
I used chocolate chips, and I used a mix of both semi-sweet and bitter, like dark chocolate, bittersweet.
Yeah, I used the Ghirardelli semi-sweet chocolate bar.
Okay.
Because my recipe said, it said you can swap for chocolate chips, which is what I was going to use because I just didn't want to take time to chop chocolate and have another dish to clean. But it said that it would affect the lava effect.
Oh, really?
So I decided to try the chocolate.
Oh, so it's yeah, using...
Yeah, and I guess if it makes sense because chocolate chips, like in a cookie, they don't really melt.
Huh. Yeah, you're right.
So I wonder if that has something to do with it. But I mean, I didn't get the lava effect anyway, so... Something else went wrong.
That's a good point, though. That's interesting. I like the ganache that is what you put inside that like melts into the lava. I could eat that with just a spoon on its own. I thought it was so delicious.
But I wondered about that. So yours, had you make ganache and like pour the cake around it, like a frozen ganache or something?
Yeah, had me make ganache and I let it firm up in the fridge. And then I scooped out like a generous tablespoon of it and I pushed it gently into the middle of the lava cake just until it was almost completely covered. And then I just used a spoon to like cover the rest of it with some batter. And then I baked it like that.
See, mine didn't have me do that. I always thought in my head, like that's how you made lava cake.
Uh-huh.
But mine just had me make like a cake. It was a like almost a flourless, but it had a quarter cup of flour, a lot of eggs, sugar, and chocolate and butter. And it said, you know, 9 to 13 minutes. And then when you cut into it, the inside will flow out. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, this is just going to be like undercooked cake. And it, I mean, it was more runny than just undercooked cake, but it was not the lava.
Oh, that's weird. So there was no, you're not like, you didn't put anything inside in the center to ooze out. Huh. That's odd. Yeah. I would think, because just when you think about the how it's constructed, you would imagine you're putting something in, like a filled cupcake or a...
Right, yeah.
That's odd. I don't know.
So maybe I need a different recipe.
I think we should make these again. When we go to the beach, we should make these.
And we can have a whole dinner from chef.
A whole chef-inspired. Also, I don't know if you've had this. This is not baking-related. But I've also made... there's a scene towards the beginning where, like, Jon Favreau invites... I don't remember the names of the characters. John Favreau, Carl Casper, invites whoever Scarlett Johansson's character is over for dinner. And he makes her this pasta, this like olive oil pasta with garlic, which looked so good. And we have made that pasta. It's just, it's so simple. It's just the noodles and it has a lot of olive oil and a lot of garlic and some parsley. And you sprinkle like some lemon juice and a little bit of Parmesan cheese if you want on top. Mm. It's like the easiest thing, but it is so good. It's really good if you love garlic, which I do.
Yeah, I do too. That sounds really good. We'll have our meals all planned out then.
We have a meal plan. Lots of carbs, but I think we'll enjoy it. So yeah, so there's a lot of really good recipes. Really, we could do like a whole chef episode if we wanted to.
That would be fun.
So, like just food in general, not just baking. Someday, season 15, we'll do it.
Yeah, we'll add that to the list.
It's time to check in with a special guest for his O2 brownie cheesecake swirls.
Hi, this is Arnold, and I just came from a workout. And I'm very hungry, and I'm craving a little bit of the sweet tooth. And listen, first of all, it's very important to work out and stay healthy, but I mean, there's no two ways about it. We all want to eat some junk food here and there, right? So one of my favorites is the Godiva. It was started in Belgium in 1927, and I love the brownie cheesecake swirl. So I'm gonna get the package right here, and I'm going to turn it around, and this is what we got to do, right? Very important. First of all, do not eat raw batter, all right? So this is very important. You get diarrhea or E. coli and all these things here. So these are the things you're going to need, all right? First, you're going to need 8 ounces of cream cheese softened. So leave it out on the counter so it gets soft. You know, that way it will not be a pain in the butt to stir it, all right? And also 1 egg, all right? And these are the things that you're going to need for the brownie batter. I need a half a stick, quarter cup of unsalted butter, right? And then 1 tablespoon of water, and then 1 egg. So first you're going to heat the oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit, and then grease the bottom and side of the pan, or place a removable bottom in pan if needed, right? If you're one of those guys or girls who doesn't know how to get it all, you know, creamy and the butter and all these things. Anyways, sorry. This is very, very serious baking, all right? You're going to beat the cheesecake mix, cream cheese and egg in a medium bowl on a low speed for 30 seconds, all right? And then on medium speed for 1 minute. The batter may be lumpy, so set it aside until step 4. So step 3, place butter in medium microwave safe bowl, cover, microwave until melted, and be careful, the bowl will be very hot, right? And then empty the brownie mix into melted butter, stir until blended, and then microwave 20 seconds, add water, and then the egg, and stir for 1 minute until very well blended. This is very important. You don't want any of the lumps, just like your butt, all right? Do the squats, eat healthy, no cellulite, all these things here. All right, and then reserve a quarter cup of the batter, and then pour the remaining batter into the pan and spread evenly. So we're going to spoon the cheesecake mixture over the brownie batter and spread evenly, all right? This is step 4. And then step 5, we're going to drop reserved brownie batter by 6 teaspoons over the cheesecake mixture. Pull the knife through teaspoons of batter in like an S pattern for the marble design, if this is what you want. And then you're going to place pan on the baking sheet. And then step 6, you're going to bake for 36 to 41 minutes or until the edges are light golden brown. And then cool for 30 minutes. And then refrigerate for 2 hours until completely cooled. Step 7. Run knife around the side of the pan to loosen, and then to remove the cheesecake from side of the pan, push up center of pan of the bottom, leave the cheesecake on the pan bottom, right? And then place cheesecake on the serving plate, refrigerate until serving, and then store leftovers. Like there's gonna be leftovers. Look at you. You can eat the whole thing, all right? You lack discipline, just like me. I want to eat all of it. All right. And then I guess that's it. Do some squats. Don't get diarrhea. Drink milk. But milk is for babies, all right? Drink beer. All right, that's all I have to say. Enjoy the baking. Enjoy the eating. And then hasta la vista, baby.
That was great. Who knew that the Terminator was such a fan of brownie cheesecake swirls?
I know, right? So listeners, if you have something that you're passionate about, please send us a message on Facebook or email procrastinating@yahoo.com or leave us a voicemail and we would be glad to feature you.
We would like more celebrities like Arnold Schwarzenegger, please. We'll take both normal people and celebrities. We don't discriminate.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Procrastibaking. We hope we've provided some food for thought for your next Procrastibaking project. As always, the links and photos discussed in this episode can be found in our show notes. Procrastibake with us on Facebook and Instagram while we wait for our next episode to rise.
We release new episodes first and third Fridays on your favorite platform. Tune in to the next batch of Procrastibaking for a special episode celebrating the 1920s. Until next time,
stay sweet.
This has been Procrastibaking. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts and leave a good review. You can also subscribe to us on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and many more. You can also subscribe to our RSS feed directly from our website at procrastibakingpodcast.com. Also, feel free to follow us and give us your feedback on social media on Instagram at procrastibakingpodcast and Facebook at facebook.com/procrastibakingpodcast. If you'd like to share your procrastibaking stories and photos with us, you can send an email to procrastibaking@yahoo.com. Procrastibaking is hosted and created by Rachel Rhodes and Luisa Gonzalez, produced and edited by Raul Ceballos, theme music by Alex Walker-Smith, and show artwork by Rob Demers.